You're listening to Valley Public Radio. Today we are joined not only by Maestro Theodore Kuchar, but also guest artist, violinist Chad Hoops, who makes a return visit to Valley Public Radio. Chad, welcome to our station today.
Thank you.
It was 2 years ago, almost this month, that you joined us last for an interview when you made your debut with the Fresno Philharmonic. You're back now for another concert. This one is being titled by the marketing mavens at the orchestra, Youthful Virtuosity. And certainly I think that's a very appropriate title for such a talented young artist such as yourself. In the 2 years since you've been here, how has your musicianship and your artistry changed?
You know, I think, of course, with age, you know, you have maturity that happens in the playing. And, you know, for me, I don't really keep track of it's hard for me to really tell. People say, well, you've grown. This is really cool. Or, you know, it just kind of happens. But, you know, I've had a lot of incredible experiences and experience with different musicians and teachers and just playing that I've really grown from. So it's exciting to come back and, of course, work with Maestro Kuchar. And we've never played this piece together. So this is really exciting for me. And I'm thoroughly looking forward to it.
Yeah, we'll talk about Lalo Symphony Espanol in just a moment. But and I should have mentioned, Chad is just 18 years old, and such.
I feel
an
so old, youthful virtuosity, or whatever it's called. You know, it's
such an amazing talent to be here. Ted, you've followed Chad through his career from a very young age. How exciting has it been to see him grow as an artist?
I think I first heard Chad when he was 12 years old in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. I was conducting there, and my former teacher, who was Chad's teacher, he approached me in the corridor of the Cleveland Institute of Music, David Cerrone, and he looked at me and said, "Ted, how would you like to hear something you've never heard before?" And that's a very loaded question. That could imply all kinds of things. So being somebody who enjoys risks and the unknown, we agreed to meet in his studio at 3:30. And I guess I was let down. There was a young 12-year-old kid with a violin case.
What did I get myself into this time?
And Chad was to be playing several Sarasate encore pieces, I think it was, with the orchestra in Cleveland. And this was going to be the last rehearsal with the piano before Chad was going to go on and rehearse with the orchestra. So Mr. Cerrone clearly wanted me to come and hear his prized baby. And that was actually the beginning of the relationship, because from that point on, we developed a very casual friendship that resulted in an invitation to Fresno. Then we had several other orchestral engagements in a few other places since then. And, you know, when I met him, he wasn't shaving. The last time he was in Fresno, he wasn't shaving. Now he's shaving. But most importantly, violinistically, what we've seen as a 12-year-old virtuoso, you know, a young adolescent with virtually no technical obstacles in his possession, he's gone now to what I recall when he was last here, is being a very deep and mature musician, certainly somebody who surpasses his years and experience.
And Chad, again, is performing with the Fresno Philharmonic this weekend, Saturday at 8, Sunday at 2:30 with the Fresno Philharmonic at the William Saroyan Theater. You mentioned how excited you are, Chad, to perform this piece by Lalo, Symphony Espanol. Tell us about this piece. It's one that maybe some of our listeners aren't familiar with, share your thoughts about this work.
Well, I mean, it was composed for a violin virtuoso, Pablo Sarasate. Yeah, and so this is a pinnacle of, you know, virtuosity. I think the concert, it has a perfect name, but, you know, it's written in 5 movements, and it's not... it wasn't written as a concerto, but it's, you know, viewed now as a concerto. And it's kind of cool. I was reading about it the other day, and this piece Tchaikovsky was inspired by this piece to write the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto. And that's the last thing I played when I was here. So it's kind of cool, you know, I'm coming back and playing something that, you know, inspired the previous thing I played here. So it's cool, and it's 5 movements, and it's performed as a whole, you know, as a concerto. and it has a real Spanish flair to it. It's an amazing piece to play, and I've actually never performed the third movement, which is I think it's arguable to say that it's the most sensual movement of them all. And it adds really unique kind of flavor to the piece, and I absolutely love it. And to work with Ted on it, it's going to be even more fun because Ted's such a fun person to work with.
Thank you, Chad. You know, it's interesting to note is Chad just informed our listeners that it is a five-movement symphonic work, but it's only in the age of CD, the age of the compact disc, that the work has been recorded in its entirety. There was almost an entire generation of violinists, those who were trained by Ivan Galamian. So the Pinchas Zukermans, the Yitzhak Perlmans, the Michael Rabins, and everybody who descended from them as students. The work was seen as being possibly too long as a concerto. To have five separate movements was highly unorthodox in the form of any concerto. There's no concerto to match the former structure that way. And Galamian did not teach the third movement. He did not believe it was relevant to the piece, that it only detracted from it. So therefore, when the god or the guru or the doyen of an entire generation of violinists says, I don't teach it, it ain't worth doing, naturally, traditions develop from that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as so many things have changed in the age of compact disc, where every label is recording complete cycles of complete symphonies, complete concertos, not only complete works, but works exactly as they were written. Everybody follows every single repeat. Nobody takes cuts mm-hmm. the way they were done traditionally. People want to be as complete and concise and loyal to the original as possible. And now we're living in a generation where those romanticisms or liberties that were taken in the past are now being replaced with complete adherence or loyalty to the original text. And I'm very happy that we'll be doing it. You know, I was talking with our concertmaster here, Stephanie San Ambrosio, and she was saying, my God, you know, when I think of all of the students who played this when I was a student, when I think of, you know, my days in the Cleveland Orchestra, we only heard the four-movement version of Sinfonía Española. We heard the first two movements, the last two movements. The third movement in the middle was left out. So this will make it a bit of a novelty.
Because I haven't talked to Ted yet, but I hope there's a small cut in the last movement that I will take.
That's very good.
Chad, going back to your comments, and again, if you just joined us, Chad Hoops, a young violinist who's performing with the Fresno Philharmonic this weekend, and Maestro Kuchar joined us in the studio today. Chad, you were reading about the piece mm-hmm. and how it had influenced Tchaikovsky. Is that an important part of your approach to performing a piece, is not only the music, but also learning a little more about the backstory and some of the connections there that are sort of in the history of the work or about the composer?
I mean, I think it's really important to know the historical kind of setting, you know, to know kind of what it was like for that composer to live in their time and what kind of transportation there was or what the world was like. Were there wars happening? What was their government like? Or what kind of food they had? Or, you know, just things that are really, I think, important to know in order to really understand the piece. And like I said, I think that really helps a lot. And to know that Tchaikovsky viewed this piece as something credible and he looked up to it and wrote his own concerto somewhat, you know, being influenced by this and seeing the virtuosity in it. And it's important to see that. So,
Chad, you're 18 years old. You're traveling around the world. What's your life like right now as a young man? Doing this concert, many others, you've been on the greatest stages in music, Carnegie Hall and so many others, and national broadcasts and all sorts of great honors. what is your life like? You know, most people your age, are they're just happy to get behind the wheel and drive
somewhere. He's thinking of the senior prom right now.
I actually won't be in town for that, so that's off the the table right
are
now.
Are you in high school?
I am. I'm in my final year of high school, which is wonderful because, you know, high school, if, you know, if there's any high school seniors out there listening, maybe not. But, you know, you can attest that it's a really wonderful time because you're almost there. But, you know, I think I have a pretty normal life compared to what it could be, but I'm loving the opportunities I'm having, and I'm so lucky to have them, and just thirsty for more. It's an incredible experience being able to, you know, work and practice and perform, and if you love it, it makes it even more special, and I love it, so it's great. And being able to look forward to working with different people and different conductors and different orchestras and the whole recording process. I'm going to be recording in the spring for the first time, my debut album. So that's really exciting. So, I mean, lots of things are happening that for me are so exciting, and I'm just really blessed and lucky to have these kind of experiences that, you know, it's hard to see. It's hard not to have these kinds of things and see my life being normal without them, you know. So it's a good thing.
So what's next for you, Chad? Most high school seniors have their college picked out, have their they're kind of an idea of where they're headed in the next year. What's on your agenda?
You know, college has always been in the plans. I think I will go to a conservatory. It might not be for the bachelor program, but it will probably be for an artist diploma program or some sort of artist certificate. Since I will continue to concertize and record and keep on doing this, so I'm not sure exactly where yet, but I think there's options: New York, Boston, Cleveland, maybe even Europe. Of course, there's some wonderful places to study, and for me right now, it's more the teacher to study with rather than the school, because if I have a great connection with the teacher, that's, I think, what counts most, because that's the person that you rely on and you know, play for and just get your ideas from, some of them, and kind of your musical growth. And I've had a wonderful teacher in Cleveland the past couple of years, Joel Smirnoff, and of course David Cerrone, and you know, it's just I'm lucky to have these teachers, and I look forward to being able to continue to work with great artists and mentors.
Ted, what's it like being able to see a young artist blossom in front of your eyes, even just in the last 2 years since you had him here last, or since that day when you got called into that office and say, hey, do you want to hear something? What has to be a different experience than a mature artist who, you know, everyone knows so-and-so. I mean, it has to be especially interesting for you because you're also playing a part in that artist's development.
Well, the interesting thing is that even now, you know, at 50, we're still doing so many things for the first time. And I think whether you're an 18-year-old violinist who certainly has a lot of expectations placed upon him by management, you have to be a little bit like a sponge. You have to absorb all kinds of moisture that's around you, whether you like it or not. And in the case of a young musician such as Chad, you're constantly forced to learn new repertoire because, you know, you can only do so much if your artillery is based on a handful of works. And at the same time, I think his career has been managed in a very, very conservative and thoughtful way. There are some people by this age who, you know, have 25, 30 concertos ready to go, and they're burned out by the time they're 21 and they're doing drugs or committing suicide, you know, within that. I think to have had teachers who care, who were overseeing every motion of his existence, knowing that he's never carrying more than one or two concertos over an extended period. A
couple more than that. Four or five at this
point. Is it? Mm-hmm. And what are they?
Tchaikovsky, Mendelssohn, Barber, Lalo. Mm-hmm. And I forgot. There's one more.
Okay. So at least there's four.
Yeah.
But that's fine. Look, that's fine. The thing is that at this age, one is forced to learn, to build the repertoire. And I have to say also, we don't understand it as well when we're that age, but the brain absorbs and we learn things much better at 16, at 18, at 20 than we do at 46, 48, or 50. You know, the things that I'm happiest to do by memory right now and not even open up the music or the things that I remember learning when I was in my teens and early 20s. Because at that time, somehow we were fixed on learning. The process of how you learn something was overseen by somebody more experienced than what we were. And once your career develops to a point where, you know, you're crossing the ocean once a week, you're doing two, possibly three different programs, and I never try to reveal what I'm conducting for the first time or for the 101st time. You never divulge these things. The things that we learn now for the first time are done with a lot more stresses in life. They're done without the stability of being in one place. We don't absorb it in the same way. Of course, my brain is in the same condition it was when I was 18 years old. It's all of the other conflicts in life which probably detract a bit from how we learn. So I think Chad is going through, you know, a very important period in many ways, to be thrown into situations with professional orchestras, to be collaborating as a chamber musician with people you're meeting for the first time, and to be pulling repertoire out, which, you know, a seasoned veteran has played 50 or 150 times. Mm-hmm. He can probably count on one hand, in most cases, how many times he's performed these. And it's a very, very developmental period, and I think it has its stresses. It's very rewarding, it's very exciting, but it must be stressful in its own way.
Speaking about very exciting, I want to ask you about your instrument. It has to be a thrill to play on such a wonderful work of art itself. Tell us about that.
I think this is the same violin I played when I was in Fresno last time. It's 1713 Stradivarius, called the Cooper. It's a wonderful violin. I'm so lucky to play it, and I really do love it. It's exciting to be able to play such a great violin, and, you know, it's a tool for me. And sometimes I forget and take advantage of the wonderful opportunity I have to play it. So I you know, Jonathan Mills, who owns it, I'm so lucky and privileged to have someone like him trust me with it, and, you know, and believe in me. So I'm really lucky.
So what's next on your schedule? You have this Fresno performance. You mentioned the 4 or 5 concertos you're carrying right now. What else is on your agenda?
The past couple months has been pretty crazy for me, and I'm playing next week in Salt Lake City, a recital, and then I'm home for a while to prepare for this recording I'm doing in the spring, and then concerts pick back up in January. So
very exciting. Ted, the Symphony Espanol by Lalo is only one of the pieces on the bill this weekend. Tell us about what else.
I'm most excited because the work that will close the program, the Dvořák Fourth Symphony, to the best of my knowledge, has never been performed in the United States west of the Mississippi River.
Really?
You know, it's a well-known fact Dvořák composed 9 symphonies. But for those of us who were still growing up in the 1960s and 1970s, if you go back and look at your old LPs, you'll see that the numbering of Dvořák's symphonies was completely different to what it is today. The Dvořák Symphony No. 1 on 78s and LPs referred to his Symphony No. 6. The Symphony No. 2 was what we know today as 7. 3 is 5, 4 was 8, and Symphony No. 5 is the New World Symphony No. 9. Dvořák, during his time, he composed these first 4 symphonies, and he came back, he revised them a bit, but he did not want them published, and the works were, Dvořák had never heard them performed, they were unknown to the public, and they were not published or accessible until decades and decades after Dvořák's death. And even at that time, they did not have official numbers. They had opus numbers, so it knew chronologically where these symphonies actually came from. But it wasn't until a complete edition of the complete works of Dvořák was published that these early symphonies were put into their proper context. So whereas the symphonies that we know, 6, 7, 8, 9, the 4 great Dvořák symphonies, are from much later in his life, this 4th symphony is his opus 13. So it's a relatively early work. And as I said, because the works were not published in Dvořák's lifetime, a lot of the snobs or the so-called Dvořák experts probably swept the dust under the carpet and were very happy to ignore it. But I've done this symphony 7 or 8 times in the past few years. Well, it's always for the first time. Even I did it with the Czech orchestra, and, you know, they're the biggest snobs because they would think, if it was worth playing, we would have played it. And I think it was a revelation for everybody. So, as I said, I'm virtually sure that it has not been performed west of the Mississippi. I know that I was involved in the Cleveland premiere in the early 1980s. And, you know, for an orchestra that has such a deep Dvořák tradition to have never played a piece like that, it said something. And as far as I know, the other top five orchestras had never encountered this work. So it's a bit of a historical treat for Fresno, but it's a work which needs and deserves no excuses made for it. It's a great work, and I have no doubt as to the impression that it will make.
That's very exciting. We're looking forward to hearing that and everything else, including the youthful virtuosity of violinist Chad Hoops.
The youthful virtuosity of Antonín Dvořák, Opus 13. He was also
and Ted Kuchar, even though he's 50. I mean, he's youthful virtuosity. It comes across.
Yes, indeed. We're looking forward to it. That's this Saturday at 8, Sunday at 2:30, the Fresno Philharmonic with Chad Hoops performing at the William Saroyan Theater. Chad, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Ted, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Joe.
This is Valley Public Radio.